Hit the record button, so we are now recording.
This is Jon Snow, Fedor, of the USS Melbourne, and you are listening to Comic Pop Library.
Whatever you do, I'll do it too. Show me everything and tell me how. It all means something, and yet nothing to me. Oh, I can see there's so much to learn. It's all so close, and yet so far. I see myself as people see me. Oh, I just know there's something bigger out there. I wanna know, can you show me?
Everybody, and welcome to another episode of Comic Pop Visits, brought to you by Comic Pop Library. I'm Richard, along with
Jacob
and Logan.
And we are on part two of our visit with Jared Rohl, the curator and owner of the Nostalgia Awakens Vintage Star Wars Toys 1978 to 1985 exhibit. So, Jared, thank you for continuing on with us. We do appreciate it.
Hey, no problem.
His wife's probably in the background ready to kill. No.
No, I think they she's upstairs.
Oh, okay.
She's upstairs.
Well, tonight go ahead.
What's that? I was going to say, because I have four kids, and the deal was I put them to bed early. They go upstairs to their rooms. They're allowed to read. Mm-hmm. And I think she's up there just kind of keeping an eye on things in case they need anything. So she's awesome. I mean, I haven't asked a lot because, again, I'm a reform collector, but she never once said, Jared, you've got like 17 boxes down in the basement, and we don't have a lot of storage space. Could you get rid of all your childhood toys? She never once asked me that. So I married a very good one for that.
Mine's at times been pulling her hair out. I was like, really? Because I just bought the Larnards coming out with the Kong Skull Island toys. I just bought the three mini play sets for those. And I was like, 10 bucks a piece. You're getting a figure, a creature, and a play environment.
That's, how can you turn that
how
down?
How can you turn that down?
Right, yeah. Of course.
So there's your glimpse into my collecting habits, Jared. I'm all
well. I mean, I'm with you with play sets. That's one thing that I lament now. I say I'm a collector, I'm a reformed collector. Don't get me wrong. I still, well, when we go to Toys R Us and with my kids, ever since they were babies, I'd be like, oh, I'm just gonna poke my head down here in the action figure aisle. I always look, and even online, I'll check every now and then to see what's out there. And one thing, Richard, that I don't see, and I'm surprised to hear that you're collecting play sets, and I don't see the play sets like we had as kids. I mean, we had, I don't know what you got into, but I was collecting G.I. Joe, mm-hmm, and Superpowers and Star Wars. Those were like the big ones for me. From Mask, that all was right, big into that. Sectors, and all of them always had a Hallmark playset, a nice big playset. It was, ooh, the big thing. It cost a lot, but man, it was beautiful. And you just don't see that with toy lines anymore.
Yeah,
there's
Legos. That's it.
Yeah, Legos.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
There's playsets, but maybe not the style you're thinking.
Right? Yeah, they're a lot of them more called play environments. So, like with this Kong Island set that I got, the play, mm-hmm, environment is like it's a lean-to shed that they built up for a command post. Like they, okay, just threw up real fast. That's the play environment. It's not a big play set. Also, like you have a vehicle along with a creature and a figure. So that's a play environment. Mm-hmm. I call it play sets, but it's more of a play environment. And even the play sets now, I picked up one on clearance, and yeah, this is another look into my life, clearance aisle shopper. I've just started getting into the DC Superhero Girls, and I've gotten a couple of, mm-hmm, those figures. And I went down the clearance aisle, and they had a school play environment with a figure that came with it, and I think it was $50 originally. They had it for $9. So I was like, I won't find it that cheap anywhere else. So I threw it in there.
Along with four others for the bingo.
Yeah, along with four others for the bingo for the summer library program. But there's not much there. It's just a tall plastic piece. There's not really any rooms or anything.
Okay.
It's just something that sits there. So it's more of a play environment type atmosphere than a play set environment.
Still, I'm glad to hear they're making something like that. Though I was just, you know, my kids are 10, 8, 6, and 6, and three of them are boys. And so we got them the Rogue One toys. We got them the Force Awakens toys. And there's no play sets though. I was really hoping that they would make a really cool, you know, play environment where you can recreate battle scenes and stuff like that. But they didn't make anything like that.
Not like they used to, no. Probably the closest thing is probably the Turtles line. They kind of have some play sets that are a little bit nicer. And they did have a 6-inch DC play environment that I came close to buying, but I didn't think was down low enough yet. It was a $100 bill down to $25, and I was still like, that's mainly just cardboard and a few pieces of plastic. But I did pass on that one. I saved money there. So, and my wife was saying, thank you. Because my father got me into collecting Hot Wheels before he passed away. And so I have a ton of Hot Wheels now. So it's like, what am I going to do with all these Hot Wheels? But now it's like, okay, it's just carrying on him now. That's become part of it. And plus they have the Star Wars and the DC and Marvel Hot Wheels that I was getting anyway, because it did relate to my collection, in air quotes.
Well, you touch on something, Richard, that's a challenge for collectors, whether it be comic books or trading cards or action figures or whatever, and that is how do you, as a collector, enjoy your collection once it grows beyond the walls of your office? You know, how do you enjoy it? How do you indulge in it? How do you benefit from it?
Well, that's the one where Logan and I are trying to start a venture.
Yeah.
If we can find a building, we're wanting to actually purchase a building and put it up for display and just invite people in. And just if you like what you see before you leave, drop us a little bit of coin to help pay for the taxes or the electricity.
We got an idea from another guy, but I can't
remember. Yeah, we got an idea from Kevin Stark, I believe his last name was. He's used to be the director of Toy Action Figure Museum down in Paul's Valley, Oklahoma.
Oh, yeah!
And we stopped through there 2 summers ago and visited with him and talked with him for about 2 hours as well.
I bet.
And he was a toy designer. And so a lot of this stuff he designed and was getting for free, because he would get the stuff out there. And then he just got in. He said he went to a flea market and found a couple of stuff that he liked as a kid. And that started the ball rolling. And he used to live in California. He moved back to Paul's Valley. And when need be, he would commute to California. But he does most of it online. And he said he has 90% of the museum's collection is his on loan. And the other 10% actually is owned by the museum. And while we were visiting there, he says, and I have 3 warehouses full.
Oh, boy.
And I was like, oh, my gosh. And he'll take people to the warehouses if you have enough time. And he has the time. He'll take you to the warehouses and he'll let you go through it. But he worked out a deal with Paul's Valley where they actually went in together, and the town actually bought the building, refurbished the building, as long as he would provide the collection. So that's how that all got established. But I doubt if that's going to happen with Logan and I. Mm-hmm. It's going to come out of our own pocket.
Yeah.
So we sat down and we're actually like, okay, we got to put this much back a month. We have a building in mind that's a 2-story building, but we don't know if it's being rented or if it's been sold. It definitely would need work because all our buildings are probably 40s or older.
Uh-huh.
You know, so
yeah, probably.
They definitely need some rehab. But that's where we're looking at and trying to create, and actually moving the podcast equipment down there, because the building we're looking at actually has storefronts. And we would actually, if you remember Northern Exposure, the radio guy had that window that he would wave at the community
while
we were recording. I always had the dream of having the podcasting equipment right there at the front window, so if people walk by and they just want to come in while we're recording and set in, they could. And if they wanted to join in the discussion, they could, or whatever. So whether that particular dream will come true, Logan and I are working on it right now.
So. Do you collect vintage toys, meaning like pre-1990s?
And when I can find them at a fairly reasonable price.
Garage sale.
Yeah.
Garage sale vintage.
Garage sale
but isn't vintage. The problem with that is that they're all lovingly played with and missing every movable part and accessory?
Not always.
No, okay.
That one Vader head case you found.
Yeah.
That was more complete than yours.
Yeah. Logan and I went garage selling 1 year, went to a garage sale, and there was a vintage Darth Vader case, and then there was a box for the chicken walker, and went up there, and I was like, oh, okay, these are cool. I already had two Vader cases, but I said, if it's not expensive, I'll go ahead and pick it up again. Opened it up. It's half full of figures.
Nice.
And all the clothes are there. You know the ones that had the vinyl capes, like Forlom, I think, or Zuckus, whichever one it was, that had the vinyl cape. It was all there. Weapons were there. When I looked at the chicken walker, the only thing missing from it was the top turret gun.
Yeah.
And I said, how much do you want for these? And it still, even though it was partially ripped, it even still had the inside picture that came mm-hmm. in the case to show what figures you could get. And I asked, I think she wanted 10, but let me make sure. And the lady came back out, and I said, what do you want for all this right here? And she said, 15. You got to sell.
Okay. Yeah, I was going to say, I mean, that's what's happening now. When I was curating this exhibit, the Nostalgia Awakens exhibit, I mean, truth be told, when I agreed to do this, I dug out my toys mm-hmm. from that were in storage, and I looked at them and said, okay, if I'm going to put these out for people to see, I want to make sure this doesn't look like a flea market display. This has to look like a curated museum display. Right. That means everything has to be in very good shape, and it has to be 100% complete, and no broken parts, no missing stickers or anything. So I went on eBay and I bought some pieces. I replaced some pieces for like the snow speeder, for example. I didn't have the grappling hook on the back side, the harpoon hook. That's what it is.
Right.
Mine was missing because it was one we had when we were kids. And so I had to it was just cheaper just to go and buy a new one. And I sold that one for something. And so I had to do a lot of that. And one thing I found, guys, is that, something very different now compared to when I was doing this back in the early 90s is that reproduction parts are endemic to collecting. Yeah. I mean, thankfully there are websites out there like I think it's called imperialgunnery.com where this guy has gone through and he has taken very detailed pictures of what each action figure's gun looks like mm-hmm. because there are very good repros out there. Now, for your average collector, you may not care, and that's okay. Because you can get Leia's blaster for $6. It's a repro. But the problem is that if you're a completist and you want an original, you want to make sure it's original. And so what you found there, Richard, in that case, you have these guns, you know that they're original because this family you bought it from, they're not buying repros. This is stuff their kid played with probably.
True.
These guns are worth a lot more than $15. I paid $40 for an original Leia's blaster because the guy guaranteed me, like he had a good pedigree behind, well not pedigree, he had a good background, like a good provenance. $40 for a blaster, yep. But I knew it was original.
Right. And with us, you know, we're looking at it as, you know, it's not going to be like you're doing with yours. We're not looking to try to be professional grade. If it's a repo, repop is what I call them, that doesn't bother me near as much. If I can know that they're not, I try to get those. But if I can't get anything else, I'd rather have it complete so people can kind of see it. Because even just what I brought in, when I take people to look at the collection, they're like you said, they said, oh, that's cool. I had that. I remember that. And even if it's not complete, like I have a room in the basement that's full of my stuff, and I created a Ewok village. And whether they're from the Robin Hood line or the Star Wars line, I don't know. They're basically the same molds.
Yeah.
But some of the pieces are missing, but I got, you know, I'll go and I'll fashion stuff, use fish tank aquarium plants or whatnot, and made it look like the leaves were on top and had a canopy, and you know, and people look at that and they're still going like, this is so cool, because it's not pristine, it's actually looks like it's been played with. And it's like, yes, mm-hmm. we remember playing with that, and yeah, that piece was there, but ours was missing too. So mm-hmm. even those missing items bring back a memory sometimes.
Oh, sure.
Yeah, it's kind of weird, but that does. And so we're not looking at making it museum quality by any means. It'd just be kind of like what they're doing at Paul's Valley. As much as they can, it's original, but where they have to, they'll do the repops.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Just so they can get a finished piece. And what I found out and what he basically told me is, you know, once they opened up, after people would get finished with garage sales, they would just bring trash bags full of toys. And they would sort through them, and they have a specific room that's just parts and pieces. And he said, it might take you a few months or a couple of years, but you can put something together. And that happened to me once. It took me, I think, a year. And I think it was a Batmobile and from the Kenner line. And I can't remember what movie it was from, but I was able to put it completely together by going to garage sales and finding all the pieces. So you can do it. That's the hard way to do it. eBay's the faster way.
Mm-hmm. Well, even with eBay is a great place to, I mean, that's what, again, that's so cool is that, you know, I have parts left over with some toys that we played the heck out of, as I said, and they're basically good for parts now. But still, you can go on eBay and you can sell your parts because there's guys like you and I that are missing that one part. I had to do that with my Millennium Falcon. My Millennium Falcon was missing. It was one of the doors, that door, that ramp that drops down. It was one of the struts was missing. And there, I needed one, and I was able to buy one on eBay. And, of course, you got to do your research because those struts were also remade in the 90s. But anyhow, yeah, it's great to be able to buy parts.
And what was it? Most of the Power of the Force line was almost the same tools.
That's right.
They just brought them all back out and just stamped them back out and said, here you go, here's some more stuff.
Now, and it was so ridiculous because the Chewbacca and Han Solo that they made for that line in 95, if you remember, they He-Man'd them, you know, they made them all big and bulky, and you couldn't even fit them in the cockpit of the Millennium Falcon they sold alongside them in 95 because, like you said, they used the original mold for them. It's like, they were made for this bulky, guys. It was so ridiculous, but hey, we bought it up, man. Yes. That's what started rekindled that love for so many of us was seeing that Power of the Force line, as ridiculous as it was.
And for most of the big play environments, my wife actually bought this for me for Christmas, so she did pay full price, but she bought me the big Millennium Falcon when it came out. But all the other big vehicles that came out, I always waited till they hit clearance, and I was usually paying $30-$40 for a $100 vehicle. So I was like, okay, I can kind of justify this with Michelle. Not quite, but kind of. So, but speaking about the vintage stuff, do you have... You say you have one of everything, so I'm going to be a little particular, and you said you paid $40 for a Leia blaster. Do you have the vinyl cape Jawa, and do you have the Yak Face?
Okay, right. I do not have the vinyl cape Jawa. That is true. Here's the reason why. I don't get into every variant. Okay. So, like, my Luke Jedi, for example, I have the green lightsaber Jedi, not the blue lightsaber Jedi. You know, I was drifting down that road at one point, but then when I started to think about a curated display, I was like, that's not what the average person is looking for, I think. Let's just stick with one. But... I do have a Yak Face because he was an actual figure that was made. I do have a blue Snaggletooth because he was a figure that was made.
That's serious promo.
But I don't have the Jawa. But in the future, I may end up doing it under two conditions. One, if I could sell the rest of some other things I have to raise enough money for it. And two, I would be able to get guaranteed provenance on it because the vinyl cape Jawa is one of the worst bootleg knockoff, you know, repro trap out there that I don't even want to mess with it because it's so messy. It's so messy.
That is true. And what about the early bird set?
The early bird set. This is something that I had one and I ended up selling it. And that is another one of those things that if I could buy it back again, because this is what I said to my wife too. I said, listen, I'm not going to use any family money on this because I always wanted the Palitoy Death Star. Mm-hmm. Now, I don't know if you're familiar with the Palitoy Death Star. This was, it's beautiful. Okay. So you do. Yep. I've always wanted it. It's never sold in America. But as a collector, I discovered it, and I thought to myself, I've got to have this. It's an actual playset. It's so different than anything we had as kids in the United States, but it was still an actual authorized playset. It wasn't just a knockoff because it was Palitoy. And so that I did buy to have on as part of this exhibit. The early bird playset, that is one thing that perhaps I'll end up buying down the road because, yes, technically that is an action figure toy from that era. And it's just one of those deals where it's just too far out of reach, you know.
Oh, yes, I understand.
But everything else, though, all the other – the Sears exclusives, those – you know, I have the – I don't have the mini rigs unless the mini rigs are of – the unless they're featured in the movie. So like the tripod laser cannon, that's right. There. The radar laser dish thing, that's there. There. But not the Star Wars inspired pieces, okay. Because they weren't in the movie. And as a kid, I didn't want those because that's not Star Wars. That's somebody else's idea. So that's true here too.
Okay. And do you count the cartoons or not? Like because those are some of the harder figures to come by too, like the Ewok figures and droid figures.
Ewoks and droids. The only droids figure I think technically is the A-wing fighter, but he came with the Power of the Force line too. So I have him, but no, I didn't get into that because again, that was outside of the three movies. For me, it was all about the three movies. I have the A-wing fighter, and that was in droids packaging, and that is complete, part of the collection because it was featured in the three movies.
To go back. We kind of touched on this in the last part, just kind of retouch on this. It's a traveling exhibit if people are willing to, they could find grants possibly to get this done. Mm-hmm. That's a possibility. But you also, the display area, and we didn't get into this on the last one, so if we can touch on that, the display area, and you provide some of the cases, but not all. So would you want to explain that real fast since we didn't touch on that in the last part?
Sure. So, I mean, obviously all these things are small, they're valuable, they're fragile, and so they have to be, the entire collection needs to be behind glass, so to speak. And so that is, I found that to be probably one of the difficult hurdles for many places is that the modest rental fee that I ask for isn't always the hurdle as is finding the cases. And so you got to have this stuff behind glass. There's no question about it.
So if they're interested into you, definitely get in touch with you and see what is needed so they can try to see if there's anything that they can do to.
Oh yes, yeah, definitely. I will. I can give specifics as to what the square footage was for the other venues where it's been. Because it's very flexible too. I mean, like you can pack in some things a little tighter. Push the ships up against each other a little bit, or you can spread them out. So there's flexibility there. But there is a minimum that you would need before it just looks too kind of crammed in there. But I found some places have found solutions just by partnering. If they're a library, for example, partner with the local historical society, and then they do a joint exhibit at the library, and they just borrow the display cases from the historical society.
Okay.
And combine the two.
So that's a possibility that libraries or even museums can look at. The museums might already, like you said, already have the displays that are needed without any problem. But the libraries, I know that's a little bit tougher unless they do have a dedicated display case. Because some of the newer ones do have those built in.
Mm-hmm.
You wanted to say something, Logan?
No, I was just thinking that we have at least a few display cases of our own, but I don't think they're...
Not as much as he needs. We could probably house maybe, if we're lucky, eighth of his collection in the display that we have. That's one of the drawbacks of us when I was like, oh, this could work. And he was like, ooh, maybe not. So yeah, that's an idea I didn't think about asking the local museum. That's an idea that I might have to look at.
Mm-hmm.
Like I said, the grant avenue for grants, there's possibilities of something like that as well. But I'll have to dig into that and other libraries and museums. If you have local foundations, that's an avenue that you can kind of look at. Mm-hmm. I don't know about if there's any national grants that would support anything like this. But one of the harder things for libraries I found out is you get these grants to buy materials, which is great, but we're pretty much maxed out on material room as well because, you build a new building, but eventually it gets filled.
Yeah.
So constantly having to weed at some points. But there's very few opportunities sometimes for the programming side.
Mm.
There are some. I'm not going to say there's none, but it seems like there's fewer. There's more about, we'll get you this set of books because we want the kids to read and stuff. And it's like, well, that's cool. But we're kind of, like you said in the last part, we're facing the same thing that you said your museum was facing, was trying to get people to come in and see what we have and have fun and enjoy the environment. And we're not just a shh, be quiet type of atmosphere.
Yeah, you have your own stereotypes, don't you?
True.
Yeah.
We still have parents that come in and tell their kids that, and we're like, no, we'll let people talk in their normal voices. It's all right. And sometimes they make a bigger disturbance telling their kids to be quiet than their kids are being just talking.
Yeah. So, yeah. The problem is some of the times when the kids get on the computer and start chatting across the room.
Yeah, that's true. We have about, sometimes we have 18 or more kids in here after school. So, yeah, it does get a little loud sometimes. We have to call them down at times. But that's a good thing to see, though.
Yeah.
We're being utilized. Or
at least here.
Yep.
And I have seen them reading books when not on the computer, too. So that's even more awesome.
True.
It's only occasionally, but still awesome when it happens.
There you go. With the museum there, just kind of get back into some of the other avenues. If somebody comes in with any collection, are you open to it? And I'm asking this for, like, libraries that want to look at possibly bringing in local collections or museums. Like, if you have a, let's say, a 10-year-old come in and says, I have all these Pokemon cards. Can I display some? Are you open to ideas about that, too, to try to even get the kids in? Or do you try to, what's the process of that and with your museum to give an idea for other entities to kind of emulate?
No, that's a great question about that. With Collector's Corner, it began, the whole idea behind it originally was, for one, it was an easy way for us to, again, to turn over an exhibit space relatively quickly, and also it gave local residents buy-in and ownership over the museum. I mean, as I mentioned in our last segment, that creating a history, an interpretive history exhibit, is very involved. If you want to try to do it well, it's very time-consuming. But featuring someone's display, it doesn't take as much time because there's not as much interpretation that goes into it. You don't have to research it as much because they're bringing, it's basically setting out someone's collection. And so because we're a history museum, we always said, we should try to set up, use collections that a history museum going audience would expect to find here. So we honestly, the Star Wars collection was the most modern we had ever gone. Before that, it was 1959 to 1960. It was Barbie dolls the first year. And that was, talk about valuable. Oh my goodness. We had the woman's collection. She had a number three Barbie from the first year, and that thing, she said, it was valued at $12,000, just that one doll, because it was the number three. And I didn't know a lot about Barbie dolls, but I can imagine just collecting in a world like that, one doll, and she had dozens and dozens of dolls.
$12,002.
Yeah, you mentioned the Jawa being that expensive.
So
that's what Logan was commenting on. The Jawa was around $12,000 now for the vinyl cape.
How much?
The vinyl cape Jawa.
It's according to your interview.
I think that was Gus Lopez.
Oh.
In one of the articles, they mentioned Gus Lopez.
Oh, yeah.
And I think part of his section is that the vinyl cape Jawa,
went
before
from a mere $6,000 to $12,000 in value.
And that was a couple of years ago, and now it's fetching upwards to $12,000.
Now, is that on card?
They didn't say.
Okay, I imagine that is, or maybe it's even higher on card. You're definitely talking about, you can put these in tiers as to what's the most expensive vintage Star Wars collectible, and that's going to be up in the top three before you even get into things like prototypes, which again only five people in the world own those, and so you don't that's out of the ordinary. But to get back to your question though, okay, so do you include something like Pokemon? Our public library, which is just across the street from us, we have a wonderful relationship with them. They have a display case in their entryway where they do feature people's collections. They don't go all out like we do. They don't curate it quite like we do and put labels in and you try to put the history of whatever it is. They don't do that as much, which is fine, but that's just not what they chose to do. Now, there they've put in, like Harley Davidson stuff in there, and so they do a little more modern. Now, would we do that? Probably not, again, because we try to keep it more, something that would qualify as vintage or historic, because that's what people who come to see us would expect, unless there was something, a very good reason for it. So that would be what I'd say, unless someone had a good argument. Pokemon cards, too, the thing about that is that they're all very two-dimensional. They're colorful, but they're two-dimensional, and that would get very boring to look at in a display case. We try to do things that would, unless we'd bring in some toys or other kind of merchandise, we'd have to do it in such a way that would be very visually pleasing and wouldn't look like a comic book shop,
right?
Because we're not. Comic book shops are awesome places, but we're not that. And so we had to make sure that there's that. It's a fine line, isn't it, Richard? Like, what should be in a history museum and what shouldn't? You know, Star Wars is at that tipping point. Some people thought it was out of place. I mean, I got a little bit of feedback from people saying, what's this doing here? This is too recent. It's too modern. You know, they would comment that way, you know, very subtly. But some people believe that. And others were like, oh, it does fit here because it's still 38 years old.
True. That was going to be my next question, is did you ever get any pushback with some of the – so evidently you did.
It was very little. It was so insignificant compared to the positive reception we have and the good that came from it that you're going to get people – I mean, look at the example I gave in the last time about the Korean War exhibit that we created that was – I mean, academically and the scholarship and, you know, and professional, it was all so good. But at the same time, a lot of people just kind of shrugged their shoulders and walked past it. So not everything is going to catch with every audience, but that's why we try to do a variety of things.
We mentioned this in the last part as well, but Logan brought up the video games. Why – I and my assistant are interested in doing this because people are asking for it. But when you sit down, and I've watched Logan play a lot of them, and my brother-in-laws that are, you know, one's only a year younger than me, and some of them are 3 or 4, sometimes 6, that's their downtime, is playing video games. And if you get into some of these games, especially the role-playing games, there's quite a bit of text.
Yeah.
And there's a story behind it. It's not just, let's go fight. You're sitting there at least the first time through. If you want to read, you can get a full story and have an experience.
And some of the Japanese sections of video games literally are almost a book.
Okay.
Not quite. There's some branching bits, but almost a book.
Okay. Yes. So you have that as avenue for video games, and that's one of the areas where we're kind of like, you know, there's, you know, different ways to read now. With the collecting in general, are you finding that the new generations don't have the same passion because of the digital domain of collecting physical things? Or do you find it kind of about the same keel?
That's an interesting question, Richard. Because younger folks, right now, I haven't asked a lot of younger people, do you collect? Because the younger people are people are in their 20s, they're at a stage in life where typically, now I may be wrong about this because, you know, Jacob's sitting there, but people in their 20s, they may not be in that collector mindset right now because they're either out of college now and they're starting to work and they're establishing themselves. So like social life is dominates a lot of their time and a lot of their money. So maybe collecting isn't such a big deal. But I guess I got to put it more in the context of toys. I would confess that I'm out of touch when it comes to collecting now anything but vintage stuff, like modern collecting like you do, Richard. I used to be in the heart of it back when I was in grad school. In fact, I tried to get a paper published in the Journal of Popular Culture about adults collecting toys because this was the Beanie Baby era that I was studying. And so I would go to toy stores, I'd go to the manufacturers, and I'd interview them and talk about this huge trend of adults collecting toys. You go to the toy aisle and all the merchandise there was the stuff that we had when we were kids, and creating toys just for adult markets, that was a new thing at the time. It was a bigger, certainly a growing thing, and so I had a much better grip on what was happening in terms of collecting and why people collected and who is collecting now. I can't speak as much for it because I don't do as much of that as I do now, as I did in the past. Me, I'm a little more interested in the history of the stuff that I collected. So, for example, one of the questions that I'm trying to track down at this point in my life is I want to know more about collector series that Kenner started making in 82. In 83, they had this packaging where they would resell the Star Wars stuff in a similar box, except it would say collector series on it. And what I'm trying to track down is, like, whose decision at Kenner was it to open this up to collectors? How did you know that it was collectible at the time? It was kid stuff. Right. But yet at the same time, they knew people were collecting this. And so I've been interviewing some people that were around back then, trying to find out a little more about it, because it's a very curious thing to me. But that was a long answer to your question.
I think Logan was going to make a comment. What was your comment?
Uh-huh.
Would be a collector, though, mainly of cards, the Pokemon Yu-Gi-Oh cards.
Okay.
I used to collect the toys in grade school and somewhere in middle school.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, space issues.
So space cards, issues, yeah.
Still awesome, and they don't take near as much space as toys do.
Good point.
Yeah.
So he's shifted his focus to mainly just the trading card games.
Also, at least one of the toys that I collected, I'm pretty sure, doesn't even get made now. The Yu-Gi-Oh figures.
Yeah.
Pokemon still does.
What he's talking about is in Japan, and if I pronounce this wrong, I apologize to everybody in Japan, but they're gashapons, and they're basically, they can be 2-inch big plastic figures up to even the 6 inches or bigger, but the big popular ones are the 2 to 3 inch size.
Mm-hmm.
And they were mainly made because most people in Japan, they don't have very big living environments.
Mm-hmm.
So that would enable them to buy more characters that they liked and have mm-hmm. in their house rather than, but still, like Logan says, you still run out of room eventually.
Yeah.
So that's why he did his shift to just the cards, and he mm-hmm. went away from the toys.
It's interesting that if the trend is moving back towards cards, because you've got, I mean, if you think like Richard, our parents, they didn't have action figure toys to the degree we did. They actually didn't have any action figures, but they had baseball cards and sporting right. cards that they collected. You know, that's where they collected that. Yeah. They were small and they were targeted towards kids, and so it was perfect for them. You know, our generation, that's where Kenner took off with Star Wars figures. You know, that was our big thing, to collect them all.
Right.
And now Logan brings up that collector cards are huge. Oh yeah, starting with Magic,
there's not even the mainly collectors. It's TCGs, the trading card games.
Yeah, the games.
Mm-hmm. Even if there's nobody around to play the games with half the time.
Yeah, being in a Southwest Kansas, he doesn't have much opportunities to actually play the games, but he's found a few people. Yeah.
There's a Magic tournament that happened for a few months. I have no clue if it's actually going to happen again, but it happened for a few months.
True. And Jacob's former collecting, I know you guys were talking on the break. Do you still do the boxes? The monthly boxes?
Oh, no.
Because that's a new form of collecting that's been established just recently.
Right. The Geek Fuel and the Loot Crates and all of those collector's boxes. I used to, and then they got sacrificed as I tightened my budget up.
Ah, okay.
So I still would. And they sent some stuff, but I just, some, a lot of the stuff, it wasn't bad stuff. A lot of it, I was like, I don't know what this is.
Yeah, he gave me a piece once, so yeah. It's on my shelf. And it's, of course, Batman. Yes.
So but yeah, that's something new. It'll be interesting as those continue on, because in all of the ad reads that you ever hear from any of the, you know, the different places, they're all like, that's it. Whatever is in that box is all that exists, and there never will be anything more
right.
like that. And so it's limited edition specifically for like a Loot Crate or a Geek Fuel. Those are the two big ones I know of. And so maybe in, you know, 10 years or so, if they keep producing, those might become more collectible. I don't really know.
And with the historical aspect of that, I think you kind of touched on this a little bit, Jared, but that's something that kind of interests me, but I wouldn't even know where to jump off on that, but I could probably sit down and think, but it'd be so much work, is the history of the collecting and how it's shifted and how it's circular sometimes and the new generations. You know, you have the digital mm-hmm. collections now. They have the digital trading mm-hmm. cards even.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
So, very little sense to me, but whatever.
Yeah.
They're a thing, so...
They're a thing. Yep, they're a thing. So I don't know if that's a, you know, that could actually be a viable topic, maybe not within a museum, but definitely within a historical context, is just how people utilize their extra funds, I guess, throwaway money.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. What's interesting is, I guess, something I used to collect, I said I wasn't a collector, but something that I used to collect was old classic, the classics of books, like Three Musketeers,
right.
Count of Monte Cristo, those kind of, but it wasn't like I went and found them in bookstores. I just grabbed the hard copies, and now I've shifted more to a Kindle because, well, it's easier because I can store hundreds of books on my Kindle as opposed to having to carry around. Like when I'm to get ready to move, I've got a lot of books to try to move, and it's not exactly easy. And so maybe people more my generation are looking for more for the digital, just for the simple fact of then you don't have to lug a lot of stuff around. Or maybe I'm just lazy and don't want to go looking for those books.
Mm-hmm. No.
And it's an option now. I mean, it's an option that's come around in the last, you know, 5 or 10 years that just wasn't around before. And, you know, you guys have used these terms, collecting, but I wonder sometimes, like Logan, in the case of these collectible card games like Magic and Pokemon and the rest of them, like, are you collecting the cards or are you playing a game? And in the process of playing a game, you have to buy more cards.
Pretty much have nobody to play against. Magic tournaments, that's an extremely recent thing that I actually did get some Magic cards basically just to play. But all my other card collections, that's just there. There is nobody I'm playing against. That's just my collections. Because, nobody is here to play, basically. So I have no clue.
So his has turned into a collection more than a playing collection.
Because as a kid, I mean, because some people say, well, what did you collect toys as a kid? It's like, well, no, I didn't collect toys as a kid. I asked for them for birthdays and Christmases, and I bought them with whatever money I had, but I played with them, so I wasn't a collect. I mean, they collected in my closet and on my shelves as a kid, but I wasn't a collector. And so sometimes it's kind of hard to define what's the difference between a collector and someone who isn't, because if you use what you're collecting, are you a collector? Or you just right. I mean, is it something else altogether?
I think it depends on the person, because when I was in 4th, 5th grade, you know, I was getting the toys too, but when I would play, I would, you know, because I didn't have anything hardly, but I would bring rocks into my rooms or whatnot, books or whatever, to use as barricades. Those scenes would stay in my room for weeks at a time.
Mm-hmm.
And when I didn't have them down in my floor, they were up my I had my dresser. My parents bought me, I can't even remember what it was, but it was a shelving type unit, and they put it on top of my dresser, and I set them up there on that shelf, and that's where they were, so I could see them. So I'd almost say that I had the collecting mentality even at that age.
Huh.
So it just depends, I think, on the individual sometimes. And my sister, she always gives me grief, says, the best way I could get you is I'd go in there and I'd move R2-D2 just a few inches like that and you would go nuts.
Oh.
I was like, okay, I don't remember that, but I probably did. Because even today, I go and look at something, something's missing. And I bugged until I can figure out what's missing. And then and when I find it, okay, I'm fine again. So I think there's a little bit of OCD maybe in there too. I don't know. I have fun with it. It's one of those deals I like to see people's reactions, but at the same time, I'm like, how many people do I invite in here, and how many are going to have fun with it, and how many people are going to turn to me and say, really? So that's always in the back of my mind. But if I know if Logan and I's deal comes about, whoever would come into the storefront, they have to come through. They're the ones that are wanting to come see it. I'm just there. So, but yeah, that's where we're at. Because for church, we had an open house, and people would come through, and all of them that went through, they were just like, oh my gosh, this is so cool. And like I said, you would hear them say, I remember that as a kid. And so I think from my age, probably forward, there's more of that collecting mentality, and it might be a holdover. Like Jacob said, his grandmother and my mother lived through part of the back end of the Depression. They were basically hoarders, because if you didn't keep it, you might not survive.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm thinking it's just, you know, canning. You know, that's what I'm thinking of. You had cans out the wazoo. It was in the storage. And I think my mother probably, and she was the same way. She makes tons of blankets every year, and we have tons of blankets because of that for Christmas every year. But I think that was just a natural progression of me seeing her keeping stuff and not letting it go. So that's how I reacted with my toys.
Mm.
And yeah, there'll be some that, yeah, like you said, they just play with them and beat them to death. Yeah.
Right.
Watch Toy Story.
Yeah.
It's fun. Like I said, I'm almost a 50-year-old man still playing with toys, so I'm having fun. And I mentioned Gus Lopez. He's close to 50, if not. We mentioned Steven Sansweet in the first part. He's in his 70s.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like, hey, you know, as long as you're having fun, I'm cool with it. So,
but so I've been trying to figure out what your collecting philosophy is, your collecting focus. It sounds as though you have a wide variety of interests, a wide variety of even the media. I mean, you mentioned everything from comic books to three-dimensional things and Hot Wheels and stuff. So how do you know what you're going to spend your money on and what you don't? Like, I mean, do you have lists in your mind of the things you need to complete something, or you just kind of buy what catches your eye?
A lot of times it's what catches my eye. My main deal is the 3¾-inch figures.
Mm-hmm.
Like I said, my father got me into the Hot Wheels. So that's a side collection that started 4 years ago. I wasn't that big into them until 4 years ago. And then I had a friend get me into the 6-inch figures. And now it's like, oh my God, why did you do this? Mm. So I have a ton of 6-inch figures now. The comic books, that's from the old day. Because I could afford a comic book faster than I could a figure. So when I was growing up, it was comic book and 3¾-inch figures.
Okay.
So that was just a carryover. And yeah, I can almost look at a comic book cover or see a toy, and I know if I have it or I don't. It's in my head.
Mm-hmm.
And to a degree, and my mother said, you know, besides putting them up on display, she said I would line up my Hot Wheels on the fireplace and the tabletop. And I'm kind of look at her sometimes and said, I wonder if I had, you know, a low level of OCD. Asperger's, because those are hallmarks of Asperger's and autism, is the, you know, lining stuff up, putting stuff in its order. If something's kind of OCD, like I mentioned as well, if something's out of order, you know that it's out of order. So I think to a degree, I probably had a low level of that. But I just was fortunate enough growing up that it was low enough, and I had college professors grab me and say, get out in front of people. And mm-hmm. I was able to get out in front of people. So I didn't have some of the social barriers that some individuals do with that. And it's all a learning curve.
I mean, what you're describing too, it's I mean, pretty common for kids to play how you described it. Even your story about your sister, you know, moving something of yours slightly. I mean, that's part of the power of toys and of collecting in general, is that it gives kids a sense of power to own something. I mean, think about kids, they own so little, and here is something that's theirs, you know, that it's not something that they have to borrow or anything. It's something that's theirs, and so they do it with what they want. And also it gives you a sense of control to collect. It's part of the reason why people collect something, because it gives you a sense of control over something. And so I, you know, lining up your cars and all that, I mean, I totally can relate to what you're saying.
But yeah, almost anything that catches my eye. I have paper products. You know, if there's a pin that's at the comic store that you can get when you buy something, I have a drawer full of pins. And I have a drawer full of lithographs that, you know, a little 8x11 lithograph that came with a comic. Throw it in a drawer. So yeah, you kind of get these side collections just because you're into another collection.
Mm-hmm.
And just throw them in a drawer. So stuff like that I have on hand that I can pull out just because it was there. And it was free. You know, so yeah, it's an addicting hobby. But I'm fortunate enough, and I've told my wife this, at any point in time, if we needed to sell something, it's either I'm either in or I'm out.
Mm-hmm.
And I told her, I said, there will be some pieces that I would pick out that I would keep because they were presents, you know, something that had some type of meaning to me. But the rest, I could sell in a heartbeat if we needed to.
Mm-hmm.
And there, you know, it would probably, I'd cringe a little bit, but you know, if you need to do it, you need to do it, you know. And thankfully knock on wood, we haven't gotten to that point at any point in our lives. But, you know, if need be, it's not going to hurt me to see it all disappear. Because it's like I told her, when I'm gone, it's your mess. Have fun.
So I've got to ask you guys this. Has there, I mean, growing up, I mean, maybe we didn't have this for any of you, I suppose. But I mean, we are so fortunate now that the people that we grew up with are now making the toys. There's so many independent toy companies out there. What toy line did you wish you had as a kid that they now make or that you've seen?
I don't know if Jacob, you didn't have very many action figures really when you were growing up, per se.
I was like all about the Ninja Turtles.
Turtles? Yeah. Okay. And what about you, Logan? Was there any action figures where you were growing up that really hit your fancy?
Yu-Gi-Oh! Ones, basically. Also the Pokemon, but mainly the Yu-Gi-Oh! If
I'm okay. My main one, and I've gotten back and gotten some of these, because it was roughly at the same time, was the G.I. Joes.
Mm-hmm.
But in the same breath, I almost hate the G.I. Joes because of the O-ring that they have in them.
No, that's an easy fix, though.
True, now that I know how to fix them, but back then it was like, oh, it's broke again. You know, it just pisses you off, but it's the same way. I've gone back, and I found a guy in Garden City that I bought a bunch of stuff for. I probably spent, over the last three summers, $400 and bought about $900 worth of stuff from him.
Mm-hmm.
On just what he paid for them, not what they would be worth, because he wasn't worried about that. And I told him up front, I said, hey, I can pay you garage sale prices, and I'd have to save up my money between each time, and I can buy $100 at a time, probably. And then he worked with me with that. So I was like, okay, that's cool. So I have a lot of 80s G.I. Joe vehicles and some figures that I was like, okay, that's kind of cool. And some of them I have that we talked about eBay. I'm having to go to eBay to put back together, because so in the end they're going to cost me a little bit more on some of those, but it's an addicting hobby. And when you see them, you're like, "Ooh, that's so cool." Current lines, like I said, it's I'm all over the map. I'm afraid it's just whatever I enjoy and see that I like, because what I like to do, and this is why, again, we want to do a building, and why we went into history to begin with and wanted to be in museums, was I love setting up displays.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not the best diorama builder, but I'm good enough that I can make stuff look passable and have fun with it and make it look neat. And, you know, I can take, you know, some styrofoam or, you know, model railroading stuff, fish aquarium stuff, and, you know, just blend stuff together to make a scene that you would never have anyway else, you know. So so that's another reason why it'd be kind of cool that, you know, I've always, you know, I think I put together a cantina scene out in the garage one time, and it was, and I had a kitchen table out there, so it was huge cantina scene. And then I tore it down, I put up a military base type deal that was out in the desert, so I brought in actual sand and put sand, you know, on the table, and then started placing the figures and the Concentrina wire and everything else. So yeah, that's where I'm, my history and the displays and dioramas that I never got to go into, since I had to go a different route to make money. Where you, I assume that's probably one of the things that you enjoy, not just looking into the history, but building the displays as well.
Oh yeah, we love it. We, at Christmas time, we did a we featured 128 light up, illuminated buildings. They were part of something called the Department 56 series of buildings. And again, this wasn't anything that was my idea. Someone approached me and said, "Hey, what's your idea for Christmas this year? You did Star Wars last year. You did 1970s the year before. What are you going to do now?" And I said, "I don't know." They said, "How about featuring all these buildings?" And so we had to create a landscape out of, you know, out of fake snow and a mountain and all this stuff. And so I'm right with you there, Richard, just loving being able to create these displays. So if I didn't work in a museum, I would have to have lived years ago when they did the big the Macy's windows department stores, where you had created these wonderful scenes that would draw in people, because it's just a lot of fun to do that. It's, see, that's creativity.
That's what I enjoy. Oh, we're running close on to a second hour again, so this one flew by. I've been having fun. I don't know about the other guys, but I've been having fun.
And I'm sorry, since you and I are the old timers on this podcast, we've been dominating the conversation here about the good old days. I don't know.
Oh, that's all right. They're forgiving of me.
Okay. It's always fun to listen in and
listen to us old timers.
Yeah, pretty much. I just need to know, was it 5 miles you had to walk uphill in the snow to get to school, or is it 10?
Mine was just five.
Okay.
It's funny. It blows my mind because I tell my wife sometimes, like, did you realize when I was in kindergarten, I had to walk to school? Like, I don't trust my 10-year-old to walk a block down the road because either someone's going to take him or he's going to get lost. I'm exaggerating, obviously, but I just – so I'm that old guy now, and I'm 43 years old, and I'm
– oh, yes.
But I still play with toys. So that keeps me young, right?
There you go. That's what's keeping me young. So, but we're going to leave out. We've been visiting with Jared Roll. He's the curator director of the Monroe County Local History Room and Museum, and he is the curator and owner of the Nostalgia Awakens Vintage Star Wars Toys 1978 to 1985 exhibit. This is a traveling exhibit. He said if you're interested, you can contact him to get some additional information. You can phone him at the museum. You might have to catch him in between meetings, but he's available at 608-269-8680. So if you're interested, get in touch with Jared. He'd be glad to visit with you. You can tell he loves visiting about the collection, and he's definitely been loving it tonight. I hope he has anyway, because he's been here for a couple of hours. But Jared, we appreciate all the time you've taken with us tonight. We had fun. So thank you.
I certainly had fun too. It's a pleasure to be able to talk about this topic that just brings so much joy.
All right. So everybody out there, we've been having fun. We hope you've been having fun listening to us. We will see you on the flip side. Bye, everybody.
Bye.
Bye.
Come along with me and don't be scared. I just want to set you free. Come on. Now we can stay here for a while. 'Cause you know I just wanna see your smile. No matter where you go, you know you're not alone. I'm only one call away. I'll be there to save the day. Superman got nothing.
Thank you for listening to Comic Pop Library. We welcome your comments and suggestions by emailing us at admin@comicpoplibrary.com. All emails submitted become the property of Comic Pop Library and are subject for use in our show. We would also appreciate it if you would spread the word about Comic Pop Library by posting about us on Twitter, Facebook, or just tell someone about us. This podcast is not endorsed by any publisher, distributor, or studio, and it is intended for entertainment and information purposes only. The views and comments of the show hosts are their own and are not reflective in any business, entity, or organization associated with ComicPopLibrary.com.